We're doing the Medrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. We're in the middle of the 39th chapter, page Kuf Mem Tes, in the Eshkol editions, page Shin Nun Gimel, in the Zichron Aharon editions. And tonight, our learning has been sponsored and dedicated by Gilboa Weisfish, in honor of his wife, Hezesh Eschayel, who is bringing up a beautiful home, beautiful children, and Hashem should bless him and her with health and happiness, and the Shekhinah should be a constant in their home. Ufatar et Chalom Paro, we have been learning about Yosef. Yosef's temptations. Yosef stood up to the temptations. He didn't stand up perfectly to the temptation because he did come back into that house, and the Medrash has learned that he walked into that house with improper intent. In the last minute, he ran out. But he did walk in. And he walked in with a certain thought in mind. And that's why he lost his rights to 10 out of the 12 tribes. He stood up. In the last minute, he got out. That's why he ended up being two tribes. Yosef is Ephraim and Menashe, but he could have been 12. And he lost that because he did err. Ufatar et chalom paro, and then Yosef was imprisoned, and then he came out of the prison, and he was able to decipher Pharaoh's dream, Sheshotar Ruach HaKodesh Alav, when God settled upon him. Remember, we said earlier that Yosef had Hashem with him. Yosef was wise beyond his years, and in spite of all that wisdom, he was ready to sin with Potiphar's wife. The Medrash was showing us that you could be the smartest man on earth, that doesn't mean you won't be tempted by sin. So Yosef has Ruach HaKodesh and he's tempted by sin, and in the last minute he gets out, and here the Ruach HaKodesh is still with him as he deciphers Pharaoh's dream. Shenemal, the pasuk says, V'yom ha'poro l'avadav, Paro declares to his servants, are we ever going to find a man like this with God's spirit within him? As our sages point out, that when Paro recounted the dream to Yosef, he changed details. If you'll carefully note the description of the dream in the Torah, and Paro's description of the dream, he changed some facts. And Yosef comes back to him and he fixes the facts. So Paro says, wait a second, how did you know? Are we ever going to find the man who's so smart? He can't be so smart. This isn't human. How did he know to correct the errors I put into my dream? Yosef spoke every language. How did he know all those languages? Hashem sent an angel to teach him. Hashem educated him, yes. Hashem wanted him to know all those languages. So we have a tradition that when he was in jail, Hashem sent Gabriel, the angel, and he was learning the languages. Now, very often our sages word it one way, and the Rishon will interpret it another way, which could be, it could make a lot of sense. Like you're saying, he was in jail. There must have been people in the Egyptian jail from every language. So, so the Medrash says Gabriel came and taught him the night before. He knew every language. When he'd go out to the marketplace, he'd see the nations in clusters, every group with their people. Each one would talk their language. Yosef knew what they were saying. That's a pretty good position to be in when you're king, when you could understand everyone else. Shenemar edut b'Yosef samo, as the pasuk says, God gave testimonial through Yosef, b'tzeito al eretz Mitzrayim. When Yosef went out through Egypt, how does the pasuk continue? Sfat lo yadati yishma, a language that I never knew before, suddenly I understand. So Yosef is now in a position where he can understand languages which he never learned. We say it in the Shir Shoyom. Now I'm suddenly understanding a language I never learned before. That was part of what's happening here with Yosef. And he was riding his chariot, passing throughout Egypt. And the Egyptian girls, well, you know what Egypt was all about. They'd exchange wives. No one knew who was whose son. Egypt was the most defiled, decrepit, morally corrupt, and debunked society on the planet. If there was one place that there was the antithesis of God's people, it was Egypt. And the girls are dancing on the walls, trying to get his attention. They're all vying for this young prince's attention. Umashlichot alav tavot zahav. And they're all throwing their gold rings at him. Maybe he'll look. Maybe he'll see their beauty. But he was modest. When he went in the chariot, there was a canopy over him. No one would see him. Yosef was above the evil eye. Yosef was beyond what they could see. They wanted him to look at them, but he wouldn't look at them. And Chazal say, that is Yosef's trait. He would not look at that which wasn't his. Potiphar's wife keeps tormenting him and taunting him and seducing him, and he's always looking away. The Medrash Tanhuma says that he kept looking down and saying tfilot, and she'd say, look at me, young man, you're a servant in my house, look at me, and he'd keep looking down till she had her husband put a knife under his chin so he couldn't tilt his head down. That's how far she went. She wanted him to look at her, but Yosef wouldn't. That's Yosef. That's why we say Ben Porat Yosef. Yosef is above the evil eye. He wouldn't look at what wasn't his. And so Hashem says, okay, then I won't let others look badly upon you. So everyone was coming to buy food from Egypt. They'd bring their taxes to pay Yosef, and they'd pay the price for purchasing. You have an export tax. You want to buy from Egypt. You want to buy food. So there's a tax, and there's the price. He talked every nationality in their language. That's why Yosef had a nickname, like he was called the translator. Yosef knew how to speak every language. Because he knew every language, he'd speak directly to them. People would come, buy the food to feed the hungry in their homes. People would come, and the people coming in would meet the people going out, and they'd ask them, "Bechamu shara mecher?" They'd ask them, "What's the going rate inside? You know, you're headed towards Egypt. You meet the caravans leaving. You ask them, "What's the rate?" Yosef would always tell them, "The price is like you heard." Ordinarily, it doesn't work that way. If I have something that's a limited commodity in the world, so if I sold it for a dollar today, then by the time the next caravan comes, they could expect it'll at least be $1.20. Maybe it'll be $2. I know there's a hunger in the world. So yesterday I got away with jacking up the price to this. Tomorrow I'll get away with jacking up the price to the next one. Look at people who rent out apartments. We just had a guy who signed the contract here in the yeshiva. The person put up the apartment for $2,400. First guy came and said he wanted $2,400. The next guy, the first guy said, okay, I'll consult with my wife and my in-laws. The next guy who came to see the apartment, the price was at $2,600. That guy, he said, okay, I want to come by tomorrow to sign. That night, one of our students came to see the apartment, and he told him $2,800. So our student said, okay, I'll take it. So he said, well, if you take it, you take it tonight. The price went from $2,400 to $2,800 one day. Why? Because that's the way the market goes. If there's a market, so I'll keep jacking it up. It's not nice, but that's the way people work. Yosef was not that way. Yosef said, you know the price you heard when you were down the road, when you were traveling with your caravan a few days out and you bumped into people who came from here? Same price, the price you heard. The price you heard, that's the price. Yosef didn't want people to start playing games with their price quotes. People would start publicizing, well, in Egypt they're selling the food. I heard in Egypt they're selling it for a shekel a bushel. He's selling it for 10. They're going to say he's selling it for 1. People will come to Egypt and they'll say, oh, it's a lie. There's a farce. People are publicizing false prices. He'll ruin the Egyptian reputation. The market has to know that there's a constant here. He can't just bank on the fact that people are hungry. So he was constant. And this way people knew that they couldn't play games. If the market keeps changing, so I could develop rumors. I develop rumors, I ruin the market. Then people say it's not a reliable market. Yosef wanted to have a steady economy. It's true, you jack up the prices, you could win, but you could also lose. You develop a bubble, you develop things that are harmful to the economy. So Yosef was a constant. Our sages say, if you start misquoting the price, and you start hurting the market, hurting the economy, by saying lies about prices, so then that person won't see blessings forever. Because a person who hurts the economy is hurting the masses. Our sages were very careful not to cause prices to go up and not to cause panic in the marketplace. Rabbi Tanchum omer tziva Yosef uvanu et haotzot bechol ir v'ir. Rabbi Tanchum says, Yosef had storage houses built in each city, v'kibetz tatvot, arotzot leotzarot, and he gathered the crops of the different lands into their storage houses. And the Egyptians laughed at him. They said, "Achshav atola tochel kol otzrot Yosef." They said, "He's not smart. All those storage houses, he should store gold or silver. He's storing food. The food will be destroyed by worms." But Yosef outsmarted them. And the Medrash seems to be learning that it was a miracle. We have other Midrashim that say that he had pesticides. He knew which earth to mix with the different grains that would prevent the worms from coming and consuming the grains. Velo shalta be'em rima, and so the vermin did not take hold of his grains. Velo chasru ad yomoto, and to the day he died, the worms did not cause the grains to be lacking. Vechilkel et haaretz b'ra'avon lechem, and he fed all of earth, all of civilization was sustained with his bread. Lefichach nikra shemo kalkol, that's why he's given the nickname Kalkol, the economist, the feeder. Shenemar, as the verse says, Vayichalkel Yosef. Yosef fed everyone. Rabbi Eliezer omer b'shat asifat Yaakov kara livno Yosef ve'amar lo bni shava li bivrit mila. Rabbi Eliezer says, when Yaakov was passing away, he said to his son Yosef, "I want you to take a vow when you hold the circumcision, the covenant, shetalin likivra avotai limarat ha-machpelah, that you will take my body up to the burial place of my forefathers, to the me'aras ha-machpelah." What's it called in English? Cave of the Patriarchs. Mitchila ayu arishonim nishbein bevrit mila. Earlier generations would hold on to the circumcision when taking a vow, term nitinat haTorah, before the giving of the Torah. Shenemar, as we find by Abraham, he tells his servants, simna yadcha tachti rechi, put your hand under my thigh. Venishbalo, and Yosef took that vow, v'shamar v'asa, and he kept his word and he performed. V'ala likbo v'ligmol chesed im Yaakov aviv. So he went up to Israel to bury and do kindness with his father Jacob. Shnemal, the verse says, Vayal Yosef likbo. Yosef ascended to Israel to bury his father. Nimtza machane Israel v'chol haaretz mevin ra'avon lechem l'machane shel Yosef. Everyone came to do kindness to Yosef's camp in honor of Yaakov. Everyone knew that they were sustained by the Egyptians. So now everyone came out of respect to this great empire to give honor to Yosef. And that honor was really reflected onto Yaakov. Yosef's coming with the whole camp to bury his father. Everyone knows they owe it to Yosef. Their economy is reliant on Yosef. So everyone bows down and comes and gives honor. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Atem gemaltem chesed im Yaakov avdi. You did kindness with my servant Yaakov. You all came to honor Jacob in his last journey to burial. I will give you the merits to your children in this world. And when the Egyptians died in the Yamsuf, ordinarily the bodies might have rotted away, the waters were turbulent, the bodies should have been totally destroyed in those waters. But God didn't do that. He gave them the merit that they were buried, a proper burial in the earth. God said, you, that generation, also had a merit. It wasn't only their forefathers who honored Yaakov, it was also that generation that said, God is the truthful one. We've been lying. We're the wrong ones. God said, you gave justice to my justice system. You admitted that I am just. That's why you will merit to be buried. So it was the original merit of the forefathers that they honored Yaakov in his burial. And so God said, when future generations will be in a situation where they wouldn't get a proper burial, I will pay you back for that because you honored Yaakov in burial. Which generation merited to get that payback? The generation that recognized that God is running the world. The generation of who afflicted the Jews when they were in Egypt. But nonetheless, they had this good point that they themselves said, Hashem is the righteous one. And so Hashem said, okay, you guys are going to get that payback. And you guys, instead of having the bodies totally destroyed in the Yam Suf, they got a proper burial. Shneimal, the verse says, Hashem, you extended your right hand so that the earth swallowed up the Egyptians. We say it in Oz Yashir. Okay, should we make a run for it? We're up to the last paragraph, and we'll end the chapter. Yes? So when the Jews came to the cave of the patriarchs. Malem Esav Mehar Seir. Esav came charging from his home on Mount Seir lechacheriv. He's ready to start a fight. He comes with his troops. Yosef came prepared. Remember, Yosef came with chariots and an army. V'amar, and Esav came and said, Shelihi me'arat ha-machpelah. That cave is mine, buddy. You guys don't touch it. Jacob ain't getting buried there. Ma'asa Yosef. So what did Yosef do? Shalach Naftali l'chapes b'mazalot v'lered l'mitzrayim l'alot k'tav olam sh'haya b'yadam. He said, Naftali, run back to Egypt and get us the document that says that we own this land. Yosef's in front of all of his men. Out comes this chief general from Seir. Esav is the king of Seir. So what's Yosef going to say? It's all a lie. He's going to tell his uncle, you're a liar. I'm burying my dad where I want. Yosef, remember, Yosef keeps trumping honesty and fairness. That's Yosef's motto in the world. So if Yosef can prove it, he knows and Esav knows that Esav has no claim. But what about all the people all around? What are they going to think? So Yosef says, okay, we have the documents. He knows that Esav knows he has the documents. And he knows that Esav might put up a fight after he shows the documents. But let him first show that he's in the right. That's why Naftali is described as a ram that's been sent, because he ran swiftly. Hushim ben Dan, there was a grandson of Jacob's, a nephew of Yosef. Dan had a son named Hushim. And he couldn't hear well, and he couldn't talk well. So he started signaling the brothers. He said, what are we doing? Why are we sitting? Why aren't we burying grandpa? We're standing out here in the heat. We made it. Why aren't we moving forward? So they started pointing. They said, that man, he doesn't let us bury our father Jacob. Chushim, he knows no... Well, what's all this nonsense? No politics, no games. He's the problem. Chushim draws his sword, cuts off his head, and the story is over. That's the tradition we have. Chushim ben Dan, everyone thinks he doesn't understand. He does understand. You're not going to win. We're in the right. So he's standing in our way. Okay, so he won't stand in our way. And the head rolled into the cave of the patriarchs. They took his body, the rest of the corpse, the headless corpse, and they sent it Federal Express to Mount Seir to be buried there. What did Yitzchak do? We have a tradition that Esav's head rolled to the body of Yitzchak. And then, in a spiritual sense, however it works, Yitzchak held his son's head in his hands. And we have a Gemara in Megillah that describes this conversation, and we have other Gemaras that describe how Yitzchak pleaded before God on behalf of the kingdom of Edom, on behalf of his son Esav. Esav stood before God and said, have mercy on this wicked one. I want you to go beyond the call of duty for my son. Now the Midrash takes this pasuk differently than the Gemara. The Gemara describes that the pasuk, every line in the pasuk, one line Yitzchak's talking, the next line God is answering. The next line Yitzchak's talking, the next line God is answering. And some of these lines, the Gemara learns are claims against Esav. But the Midrash doesn't learn that way. The Midrash learns that all the words of the pasuk were Yitzchak talking. So Yitzchak said, it's not a claim against Esav the way the Gemara says, but rather Yitzchak said, yes, this boy who did not learn all the mitzvos in the Torah, Shneimar, because the next verse says, Balamat Tzedek, he didn't learn how to be a righteous person. And he speaks improperly over the land of Israel and this cave, Shneimar Be'eretz Nechochot Yavel. As the verse says, I know that he speaks improperly over the land that stands before God. And God's Spirit answers him and says, Chayani, I swear by my life, lo yiregeyut Hashem. I'm not going to let him see the pride of God, the land of Israel. I will not give him a future life. And that's how the Midrash ends. It's interesting that in the Gemara, the conversation goes differently. The Gemara says, God, I want you to have mercy over him. And God says, he didn't learn Torah, he didn't do mitzvahs. He says, even so. Every claim God says, Yitzchak says, even so. Until God says, but he's going to destroy the land of Israel. He's going to destroy the temple. And then the Gemara says, when God points out that he's going to destroy the land of Israel, that's when Yitzchak says, if that's so, then I don't want, even though he's my son, I'm not asking for mercy for him. That's how the Gemara ends the conversation. The conclusion is the same, that God refuses. The question is, how far was Yitzchak willing to go in pleading on behalf of Esav? That there seems to be a difference between the way the Gemara interprets the Pasuk and the way the Medrash interprets the Pasuk.